Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
But first today, well, she's back in panto. Oh, yes, she is. Adele King, known to audiences for years as the super talented twink, is going to be part of Alan Hughes and Carl Broderick's Cinderella in the National Stadium. But rather than treading the boards, she's filming her part as Queen of the Fairies, and with a little help from AI, she'll make a virtual appearance along with Buffy and Sammy and all the usual panto crew, including Johnny Ward as an ugly sister. Adele King, good morning to you. I'm so pleased to have you here in studio today.
My dear old pal Miriam, how are you? This is such a nice start to a Sunday, I have to say.
Now listen, you had no intention, is this right, of going back to panto. You've got a really busy life away from showbiz. So what convinced you to get involved again?
Well, I suppose it's the old never say never, isn't it?
Yeah.
My father said when I was asking my parents' permission to go to Las Vegas and my mother was going, oh, Sacred Heart of God. My father said, well, Elizabeth, you can't keep a butterfly in a jar, you know. So I've been in the jar for a while now. I did end it, and unfortunately, a little less harmonious than I would like to with production and management. And tragically, I went out on a Cinderella, and the very first panto I ever did as a small little gesher with Maureen Potter and Jimmy O'Dea was Cinderella. So this will be actually my fifth Cinderella. So it seems a lovely one to come back. Look, Miriam, I said years ago, I go to see them all now. And I said, oh, God almighty, the idea of doing that again. When the lads asked me, Chloe said to me,
your daughter Chloe.
Yeah, my lovely Chloe said, going home in the car that night, if they'd asked you to do it like on stage, would you have said yes? And then she said, no, would you be up to it? And I said, well, rather bizarrely, Chloe, I'm answering this upside down, because I should be saying to you, oh, mentally, I'm still up there, girl, I'm doing it, but physically, no way. But the laugh about it is, Miriam, that it's the other way round.
Well, the interesting thing,
blessed,
both myself and Deirdre and my producer were saying how well and how healthy you look.
That's
so
very
interesting,
kind of,
though. You just dropped two names there, Maureen Potter and Jimmy O'Dea,
yeah,
which will remind so many people listening. You've had this extraordinary career. First of all, what were they both like?
Maureen, well, I was a pet of Maureen, so I can't say anything. She called me young one. And I still have cards at home that she wrote to me in her late 70s and 80s with, how are you, young one? So she was, Jimmy was a bit cranky now to the kids. He wasn't mad about the kids. But Maureen was lovely. They were both, they weren't really attached to the kids the way I was to the kids that were under me coming up, because I saw kind of a big distance between the adult cast and the children when I was a child in it. So I was determined that when I was the adult cast, it wouldn't be like that. You know, the kids would be more involved and I'd be part of their lives and they'd be part of mine in it. You know, and that, I think, made the presentation out the front sweeter, because we all looked like we were one big happy family having loads of fun, which to an extent we were.
Let's go back, because most people in Ireland know something about you, twink, but they don't know much about your origins. Take me back to your family, your childhood, your parents and where you grew up.
Well, I never thought I was a candidate for this business at all. I mean, all my family were very talented musically, but there's no professional people in the family. They couldn't have been further from that. My father's a Sligo man, and all my uncles and aunts down there are either vets or dentists.
And what did and your dad work at?
My dad worked for Royal Doult in China, but he was a horseman in the army when he was young. So I grew up around, because my nana in Sligo, they had a farm. And so I grew up as an infant around animals. And that's where my enormous love for them comes. And they are always, you have to say, excluding my beloved daughters, they are the number one interest and love of my entire life, and have been now for years that I had semi-retired.
And we'll come back to that love of your animals. Staying with your parents for a moment. So did you have brothers and sisters?
No, I was the centre of their universe, Miriam. Yeah. My mother was from a large enough family, so was Dad. My mum was a wedding dress designer for Jack Toohey in Grafton Street, did exquisite artwork. They were very normal, lovely, beautiful people. No, we weren't rich, we weren't poor, we were somewhere in the middle. But I didn't want for anything as a child, and they were the most loving, giving, wonderful parents. They set a great example to me for how parenting should be done, and I'm very grateful to them. Lord have mercy on them for that.
Do you think, Adele, being an only child might have had something to do with you being a performer or not?
I think I probably was born with the chops for it, Miriam. I mean, I remember reading something by, I think it was E.M. Forster, whose work I love, who said one time, I'm paraphrasing slightly now, but he said, you have to let go of the life you wanted, otherwise you will never live the life that awaits you. Mm. So I didn't want this life, as much as I'm very grateful to the powers of the universe that, you know, bestowed me with a lot of talent. It wasn't the one I wanted. I wanted to be better at math, which I was crap at, so I could continue the career I wanted, which was medicine, like the family.
So, I mean, you have, and I was listening back in preparation for this interview, a beautiful singing voice. You have an incredible ability to mimic people. You're a great comedian. But how did you first get your break in show business?
Dancing. And in fact, I said to a friend recently, he said, we were laughing, saying, what do you want in your tombstone? Oh, I said, I think I'll put there, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. But I said, other than that, I'm good. As who were you? What were you? I think with tongue in cheek, I would say she was a little dancer who learned how to do lots and lots of other things. But that's how I started out in ballet school, and I suppose that's where my heart remains.
And when, Adele, when did you get into the public consciousness in Ireland some decades ago? Was it television? Where was your big break on television?
I was on television the year the station opened, Miriam. So when I was nine, and in my book there's a picture of me on Saoirse August Bartley, about 10 or 11 years old. And then, I mean, people forget Studio 3 out here, which became the newsroom. That filmed Kosher Sorrow, At Home with O'Reilly, Town Hall Tonight, Saoirse August Bartley. I was a soloist with the Young Dublin Singers. So we were out here doing all those children's television. I grew up out between RTE and probably the Gaiety and the Olympia Theatre. And I thought every child did that.
And was it the live mic with Mike Murphy when you become most well known in Ireland?
Well, no, honestly, I think, Miriam, from the Maxi Dick and Twink days, that was the catalyst to the whole lot, because we were on, I remember one paper saying, Maxi Dick and Twink are on everything bar the Angelus. So,
and yeah, you were big in places like Turkey too.
Well, I learned to speak Turkish. I went to the language centre in Trinity, and I had a girlfriend, still, she's Chloe's godmother, Mina Gurakan, who was a diplomat at the Turkish embassy, and I started out with her. And I didn't even win the FISN competition that Louis Walsh, if you're listening in, Louis, traped me out to Turkey to do. I came in second, a Turk came in first.
And it was Louis, wasn't it? Louis.
It was Louis who sent me out, God forgive him, yeah. And I came in second, but because I had a beautiful young girl, Rana Urhuntak, she's now a doctor in Scotland, I believe. She was my interpreter in the beginning. Andy O'Callaghan had written the song for me, and she and very kindly translated a section of it into Turkish and then gave me a couple of pleasantries like Yakşamlar Türkiye nasılsın when I'd come out. And of course the poor Turks were sitting thinking, what? Blonde Irish woman speaking and singing in Turkish? What the actual hell?
And we spoke about Louis Walsh there. Are you still friends with Louis?
Unfortunately, yes. Louis and I know. I've said Louis and I know each other since we were honestly about 14 years of age.
Wow.
And we text each other. It can take a night. Or Louis is one of only three people that would ring me at 4 o'clock in the morning for a chat. Either of my daughters, Lord of Mercy and Brendan Grace, was a great man for us. Anyway, I knew you'd be up doing your cakes. What are you ringing for me? Just for the crack. I'm bored here. I'm in Boston. I'm bored. And Louis will do the same, you know, and I'd say, it has to be Louis. Oh, it's Louis. What do you want toward me? I knew you'd be up doing your cakes. I just rang for the crack.
You know? And the amazing thing is, you said, like, he might phone you at 4 in the morning. But just to explain to our listeners, I mean, you showed me some of your incredible artwork earlier, and you make extraordinary cakes from your own kitchen. But explain to listeners, when you work, you could be up in the middle of the night decorating cakes.
Oh, I do, and I could be. If I'm going to die in a bed, I've always said to the children, it'll be between 9 o'clock in the morning and noon, because they're my weakest hours. I have to gear myself up to 10 o'clock matinees used to be a nightmare. But I'm only coming to life, and I suppose it's a throwback to spending your life having to come alive for 8 o'clock, or in the dreaded band days, only going on stage for 12 o'clock to 2 in the morning. So my clock still works best through the night. And when the house is quiet and the animals have all been walked and fed and rested, there's nothing more beautiful than putting on lyric through the night, and I'm either baking or I'm doing artwork. My cue to know that I've really overdone it and I should be in bed is my dear old pal Marty Whelan, because when Marty comes on in the morning, I should now be listening to Marty in bed with a cup of coffee and toast. If I'm still in the kitchen, I'm in trouble. So it's an unusual life. I'm a bit of a Maggie Thatcher. I never needed a lot of sleep. I love sleep. I love to sleep, but I don't
need it.
I don't think I need it as much.
So you're
as
not
I
an
do.
Insomniac. You just don't need
much sleep.
I don't need sleep.
Much sleep. I never did.
And as you said earlier, talking about, you know, you'd have liked to have done medicine, and that you adore animals. You do love animals, don't you? I mean,
there aren't words to describe. They are an all-encompassing feature of my life. They're my passion. They're my 24-hour-a-day job. And it doesn't matter. At the moment, I'm looking after a little wheelchair fella now, Chloe's boy. It's not easy. I can't pretend harnessing on wheelchairs and upstairs, up down.
What kind of a dog is he?
He's a little thing.
And is he in a wheelchair?
He is in a little wheelchair, little doggy wheelchair. And he loves his life now, but it isn't easy, you know, coping with all that. But we have a saying in my house that I brought the children up on, which is, he ain't heavy, he's my brother. You know, and it doesn't matter what's wrong with them, they're the loves of my life. And also, Miriam, there's a curious thing. I met a friend of mine the other day whose marriage broke up around the same time as mine. And unfortunately for her, she's still calling him every abbreviation under the planet that's negative. And she said to me, God, not at all. I said, Dave, God bless him, came up. I said, a tree came down. He came out. He's a doctor of botany as well as an oboist.
And that's your ex-husband.
Yeah. And he came out to have a look at and assess it. And said, sure, might as well give the lawn a mow while we're here. We'd a bit of crack. You know, we're cool. We're having crack. And the girls love it. And we, you know, go out for their birthdays and dinners. And so I was feeling
lovely.
How lovely that is. I felt very sorry for her walking away to be still so sad and still so brought down by that. And I was trying to say to her, you know, you have to learn to live for one and be happy with that one. Now, there again, talk is cheap, Miriam. I'm lucky, I think, because I'm an only child. And I grew up in my own space. I very much liked being back in that place, surrounded by my dogs, my art, my cake, my paintings. And I didn't have a complaint in the world. I walk knock line. If people ask me, and I've been lucky, I've lived all over the world. If people ask me, okay, so where's your favourite place in the whole world? I would say knock line, Rathfarnham, Dublin 16. Oh. I adore it.
So it's lovely to hear you are not lonely. You live
not
alone. And I assume it's because also animals who are in your life, you're never really lonely with animals, are
That's
you?
What I was going to say. When she walked away, I said to her, would you not even get a nice little mutt that you'd have to care for and love and feed and walk? And you'd be amazed, because once you're a mother, Miriam, as you know, you spend a lifetime cooking, looking after them, changing their clothes, making sure those socks clean, get those off this minute. You spend your life looking after them. And then for a lot of people, I'm only realising, I used to hear that term, empty nest syndrome. What are they talking about? You must be delighted when they're gone. No. It is an empty nest and it is a lonely place. And part of it for women, I think, is not feeling you're needed anymore. You've spent your life being needed by those little creatures. They need you to feed them. And suddenly they're out with friends having dinner. They don't need you to cook dinner. They pick their own clothes. They go on their own holidays. And more women, as they become redundant, I think withdraw into themselves terribly. I still have to do five cats, six, eight, 11, 12. I've still to do about 14 dinners a night. for myself, all the animals. And then I feed the local foxes. I feed all the squirrels. They live up in my tree and I have a special house on my ledge. So my day, I mean, it sounds like that's Darwin. In fact,
you're like Dr.
if you were
Doolittle.
David Attenborough or Dr. Doolittle, they'd say that's a beautiful life.
Do you talk to them?
Of course, and they all have names. My four resident foxes are Rua, Railteen, Roisin and Reynard, and I know each one of them.
The lovely thing is your two girls, Chloe and Naomi, they're both doing great, aren't they? Tell me about
them. I am so proud. Like yourself with your beautiful family. My girls, Chloe is now living in Nashville with her partner, Kieran, lovely guy, brilliant percussionist, instrumentalist. I went to see him in the Royal Albert Hall with the Ulster Orchestra there a while ago. He's fantastic. And Naomi is living in the United Arab Emirates, of all places. She's a producer for Web Summit. They're both gems. Now, they really are. And I know mothers say, oh, no. They were like all girls growing up, absolute brats. You know, the typical girly when they rebel against the mother and they know better than you. So I'm not saying they were two saints of girls. Nobody has saints. Saints are very boring people. They were two normal girls, but they've grown into two lovely adults, two lovely. I'm very proud of them.
You're still a fantastic mimic, as I said. I mean, even there, the way you did Brendan Grace. Do you do that a lot still, even?
All the time. All the time. Without even having a career motivation. It just...
Like, who would you do?
Everybody. From the neighbours, you know. And then, you know, I met Nikki across the road and I would do Nikki's, ah, Jesus, Twink. And I would do whatever she said to me, you know. I would tell the lines of the story I want to tell, the way they told in their voice. I don't know whether I feel it colours the story or it, you know, it adds enchantment to the story in that you could be listening to that person. It makes the story more believable.
Do you ever miss maybe doing stuff like that or being on telly?
I think the punters do. I must be honest and say, of all the... I was lucky, Miriam. I was brought up in... Because of the era I came up in, the 60s, 70s, I was a child of theatre and television in equal doses. Like, I was on telly recording in the daytime and I was in theatre at night. So I have to say, I have always said to everybody, and they can't believe it, oh, you couldn't, theatre. What's that thing? The roar of the grease paint and the smell of the crowd. I think I always preferred television. I'm an Aries. I'm impatient. I liked the quick turnover of television. I liked, you know, series after series, and just show after show and scene after scene. I liked how quick television turned over compared to the endless repetition of doing the same thing every night for 13 weeks, you know.
You seem in a very happy place in your life. Would that be right?
I am, yes, very much so. Because I don't know how I saw the end of days for myself. I certainly didn't see myself working forever. And with regard to the panto, Miriam, the one thing I want to really emphasise is, I say to you, physically, I feel I could still do it. Mentally, could I do it? Are you having a giraffe? Oh my God, I couldn't get my head around 10 o'clock matinees, 2
you
o'clock.
You mean having to do them in person?
Well, look, I still think I could do them physically. Mm. Mentally, I couldn't bear the thoughts of all that back in the gym at 6 in the morning. And, oh my, I don't think people realise how difficult the role of headlining in panto is.
But this is the perfect solution, because it's now a big thing, the virtual performance.
I never thought I'd see it. There's me giving out bloody AI. I'm sick looking at AI, everything. And here I'm involved in it. I had to eat a yard of old rope there. Look, Alan and Carl have been great bosom buddies of mine.
Alan Hughes and Carl
Broderick. I gave Alan
the
Hughes
panto.
His first line in panto. We had already picked a character for the show, and it wasn't working. And Mavis Ascott turned around to me and said, he's dreadful, the line we'd given the line to. And I said, you see that little sandy-haired fella over in the corner? I said, everybody's gravitating towards him. He seems to be very personable, and the cast seem to like him. He seems to have a nice, but will we ask him? And I said, young fella, what's your name? He said, Alan. I said, come over here, Alan. And I said, there's a script. Go off for the coffee break and learn that. Now, when he came back to do the lines, not only did he, like, say, he got it the second, third or fourth time, he came in first time and nailed it.
Wow.
And Mavis and I looked at each other and we both said, that's grand, you'll do.
He's still nailing it.
And he's still nailing it. So I always go to see their show, and I this is just personal preference. I love all the Pantos. I love all my colleagues in them. I have great respect and love for them over the years. But I have to say, as shows go, in the last few years, I have always thought that Alan and Carl's Panto stood head and shoulders above the rest. It sparkled, it twinkled, it danced, it popped. Being in the round really helps. And they've got all these ushers who join in the show, and it's just party time. And, you know, I think I brought Panto up a huge level, and now they've moved it up another level with AI. So I never wanted to be one to be behind the scenes, because mine were very topical and very up to date. So after the show last year, I went to the after show. Chloe and I were there on the last night. She was going back to America the next day. And I said to them, well, you have a big problem now, because that was so brilliant. I don't know how you're going to follow that next year. And Alan, real cheeky face, turned around and said to me, well, we just have to get you then. And I said, that's what I did. Very funny. And about 20 minutes later, he came over to where I was and he said, listen, I'm not being funny. Would you do next year? Would you get a life, Alan Hughes? I'm 74 years young. Give me a break, dear. I can't do those shenanigans anymore. I don't want to look like a wounded animal up there. I'd like to look like I. And he said, oh, we don't mean you to have to do shows every day. We mean AI. I said, I hate AI. He said, you won't when you see yourself on the big screen. So somewhere between then and now, Miriam O'Callaghan, they talked me into it.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. Mm. Listen, you don't do that many interviews anymore, Twink. I know you're doing this. I know.
But you do you, Miriam, in a heartbeat when you ask, because I love you.
And you do talk to the Sunday Independent every so often. But I still feel there's kind of a wariness there, isn't there, too?
Yes.
Is that because you feel in the past you were burned, or you're just wary about
interviews? Yeah, I think, and I think Al Porter said it at the end of his show one night, which was really beautiful. And he said, my counterparts in Britain, Miriam, and they're all pals of mine, all the big names that do what I do. We all know each other because I lived in London for years. They're all now Dames of the Empire, OBE, MBE. And there's such a lack of respect here for a 74-year-old who's given her life, dedicated it to being a perfectionist. And my worry about this is, I don't want people, I never disappointed audiences in my life. I mean, for God's sake, you like people, you don't like people, but the people, the good people of Ireland, your listeners, that have kept me in a job and paid in for me all my life. If I have arguments during rehearsals or anything, my argument is always about the audience. I don't give a damn about us or the cast or me, and it doesn't matter what frock you're in. If you've the right rehearsal, the right show, you could go on in a black bin liner and make it presentable. It's not about dressing up a frock. Content has to be there. So when I've done shows for years, I know people have come out of the theatre saying, well, that's the best few bob I ever spent this year because I had a fantastic night. So my main aim when I say to the cast at rehearsals, if I see something shoddy, I'll say to them, do you think that's going in a show with my name over it outside? Do you think I'm asking grandmothers who possibly have been in the credit union all year to buy tickets for the grand? Do you think I'm bringing them in to see that? You must be joking. Mm. You've half an hour to clean that up when it's not in the show. And it's for the punters who have paid, who have supported me lovingly. God bless them. All that up. I don't want to disappoint them. Mm. I don't want them walking out of the theatre. Ah, for God's sake, she wasn't on the stage at all. I'm not on the stage. I'm a magic queen of the fairies. And also, I've never been on the big screen. I've been dying to
make
it to the big screen.
You're going to be this massive virtual.
I finally made it to the big screen, Miriam.
Well, look, Adele King.
Before
AKA,
you say goodbye to me,
yes,
could I know this is Sunday morning and I know it's not hospital's request, but if I may do, we have a very darling man lives next door to me in Knocklyon, and a friend of mine, Kay Dorgan, and I around the corner, we adore him and his wife, Paddy and Finn, and he will probably kill me for saying he's a young man of 89, but he is going into hospital for surgery. And I love him, Paddy and Finn, and I want to give him all my love. And I'm praying for him, and so is all of Knockline. I know that's a weird thing on a Sunday morning.
No, it's lovely. And we all send our best to Paddy and Finn.
Thank you.
As
how nice of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Listen, Adele, that's very kind of you. Thanks so much for coming into our studio. We really appreciate it. And thank you for entertaining us all down the decades. It's great to see you looking so well, still full of creativity and energy. Long may it continue. And you can see Adele on screen in a special guest appearance in Cinderella in the National Stadium from the 9th of December up until the 4th of January. There are two shows a day and all tickets are on panto.ie. Adele King, thank you so much.
Miriam, I know you're never meant to speak after the interviewer does the thing, but, and I know this will be edited out, but I want to tell your listeners, if you can fit this in anywhere, that earlier I was saying when my marriage broke up, it's very difficult for people. Oh, I don't want to upset Adele because I love David. I don't want to upset David. I love Adele. People really don't know who to go or side with. And so you can be left in a bit of a void. I got lots of cards and letters, but I got one magnificent letter that was caring, kind, so articulate, so heartfelt, that it broke my heart in a million pieces in the nicest way. And I hung that letter up on my wall and it's still there. And I often look at it whenever I feel down or blue. And that beautiful letter, one of the nicest letters I ever got in my life, was from a lovely lady called Miriam O'Callaghan.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Now, that's my out.
Thank you so much, Adele. I appreciate it.
I love you, Miriam.
Mind yourself. Take care. God bless. Bye bye.
Love you.